Blackwell 7.
Central Europe unsecured.
Designator.
Bravo, Echo 1-1.
Switching. This is Kittredge.
Go secure.
Okay, go ahead.
This is Ethan Hunt. They're dead.
Wait, who's dead?
My team! My team is dead!
Jesus.
Gallitzin's gone. They knew we were coming, man. They knew we were coming, and the disc is gone.
Are you intact?
The disc is gone. Do you read me? The list is in the open!
Listen, I read you. Let's just bring you in safely, and then we'll worry about that, okay? Were you followed?
I don't think so.
I don't think.
So.
Be sure. Are you clean?
Okay, location green, 1 hour. I'll be there myself.
Here in Prague?
1 hour.
What is up, everyone? Welcome back to the Red Stream Movie Podcast, the podcast where everything is connected. I'm your host, Jacob Thompson, and joining me is my co-host, friend, and the person most likely to fake his own death by, like, pointing a fake gun at himself and then getting, like, a tomato and mashed up going, ah! Alex Perkins. Perk, how you doing tonight?
I'm good. Did you say potato?
I meant tomato.
Yeah, it makes a little more sense with the tomato.
Hey, you can get creative, you know?
People stop believing that maneuver after the first couple times you pull it, I've found.
Yeah, this is the smell of the fresh tomato.
Yeah, and the fact that you've done it several times before.
That is fair. Welcome back to the podcast, everyone. This is a show where every week Perk and I review a movie connected to the last one we watched. If you like our show, tell your friends about it. We post on podcast service and YouTube pretty much every Friday. And yeah, come watch some movies with us. Last week, we watched Heat, starring Al Pacino and Robert De Niro, and also featuring John Voight, which leads us to this week's movie, The Original Mission Impossible. We also are going to do kind of a bonus section at the end, reviewing the most recent Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning Part 1. And we will go into spoilers, which we don't normally do for new releases, but we announced it last week. So we'll be doing spoilers on that. But we'll start off by talking about The Original Mission Impossible. Perk, why don't you intro for us?
Yeah, all right. So I had this whole dual intro planned out, so I'm going to go for it.
Okay, go for the dual intro.
The Mission Impossibles 1 and 7 are 1996 and 2023 joints, directed by Brian De Palma and Christopher McQuarrie, respectively, starring Tom Cruise and Ving Rhames. And those are the, well, and whoever plays Kittredge, I don't know, that guy.
That would be Mr. Henry Cerny, I think is how you say his last name.
Sure, good enough. And they're about Tom Cruise, who's a spy, and he runs around and beats the bad guys.
There you go.
Couple fun facts for you. In Mission Impossible 1, the scene where Tom Cruise is barely hanging off the ground, off of the pressure plates.
Mm-hmm.
His head kept hitting the ground, so he came up with the idea to weigh down his shoes with coins in the tips of his shoe.
That's cool. That seems like something Ethan Hunt would do.
It does. You know? It does.
They like anticipate that.
And then in a kind of a fun tie between numbers 1 and 7, the scene where Ethan is messing around with the knockless drive, and then also the scene where they are messing around with the key in number 7. The mm-hmm. sleight of hand scenes are practically done and just real sleight of hand, which supposedly led to need for many more takes, but it's cooler that way.
Yeah. Now, we'll talk about when we get to Mission Impossible 7, but there are more callbacks to the first Mission Impossible than any other Mission Impossible movie ever. Like, 7 has so many callbacks to the original, so I'm really glad we did
this
double feature.
Definitely quite a few.
Yeah, it was a great call. But yeah, we'll get to that in the back half of the show. I'll start off with the original Mission Impossible. And Perk, remind me, when was the last time we saw this movie, and what did you think of it this time?
A long time ago. I couldn't tell you. Probably a decade ago or more. Yeah, it's great. It's great in a lot of ways that the series has gone a very different direction, but at a base level, the original Mission Impossible is really lean. It's really well written. It's got good characters, a good story, and fun action. Overall, just a really good time. It's funny to say in summary, the only weak point for me was, I think, the final action set piece with the helicopter in the tunnel.
The goofy.
kind of lost me a little bit there. And yeah. The funny thing to think about is, of all of the aspects of this movie that were so well done, that's the one that they decided to go like way deeper on in the further movies, just these huge, ridiculous action set pieces, which are undeniably very fun, but definitely not the strong point of this one for me.
Sure. Yeah, I really, really love this movie. This is one of my favorite of the entire franchise. I love how it's more of a mystery, and there's like kind of more twists throughout than we normally get. And the twists, I think, are genuinely very good.
Yeah,
like,
not, there's a lot of not like obvious.
Oh shit moments. Yeah, that like great surprises. Yeah, I just love Ethan's character in this and kind of his whole plan and him figuring out slowly kind of what actually happened. Like, just the opening 30 minutes of this movie are fucking insane and just awesome, where his entire team just gets annihilated. And I know that the direction and the camera work is a bit divisive with some people because it's very stylized. Of a lot of the angles are pretty, you know,
Dutch angles, you say.
And the dual focus shots are kind of off-putting at times. But overall, I like that they went for it. The first-person camera in scenes, I thought, was really, really cool. So I love the direction from Brian De Palma in the first one. I think it adds a lot of personality, and it just kind of adds the uneasiness and the paranoia that is in a lot of this film. I really, really love the first Mission Impossible. It's great.
I very much agree with you on the direction. I think it, on occasion, it does stand out, but not in a bad way. Like, it stands out in a way that you would want it to stand out. Whereas, like, realistically, with the newer ones, nothing about the direction stands out. It's right. Kind of set into the formula. This is how it's going to go. Nothing too out there. Because they don't want to distract. But this is a movie where it's like, nah, we're going to try some stuff. You know, throw some stuff at the wall and see what sticks. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, and just going into it, I want to talk about the opening, because I think this is one of the strongest openings of an action movie ever, where we get the really cool scene which is called back to later in the franchise, but where they're trying to get this, I guess, Russian dude, I think, to spill something in this hotel room, but it turns out that it's all a set, and it was all set up, and it's Ethan in a mask. I think this is a nice, like, kind of set piece to kind of open and set up the world a little bit. And then we just get, like, the awesome, you know, Jim Phelps getting the mission on the plane and using the cigarette smoke to cover up the exploding mission briefing and all that stuff. It's just so cool and such a great way to, like, set up the world. And then we get right into the intro with the hottest intro music of all time. I'm sure there's some nostalgia talking for me too, because I saw this movie when I was younger, but this stuff is just so cool, man. I really, really love it.
I think that I agree with you. The whole intro is really fantastic, because it's the kind of setup that I've never seen anywhere else. Like, rarely, like, the premise of starting off with a hit team where within the first 10 minutes, everybody on the team is dead. Like, it's so cool. And also, I had completely mind wiped that Emilio Estevez is in this movie.
He's uncredited.
Yeah, for the reason, because that was the point.
But every other person that dies is credited. Like, he's not in the credits. The thing is wild. I think
for the
amount he was in this movie.
Yeah, and for 10 minutes of work, and maybe it was part of the ruse was to not credit him, to make it, I don't know, seem a little weird.
Maybe, but, yeah. But, like, but yeah, even though they all
forgot
die,
he was in it at all.
Even though they all die so quickly, I still felt it, because I feel like in that scene where they meet up and they're discussing the plan, there's camaraderie there among them, and you kind of feel their friends have been around the block before. And then you care because Ethan Hunt cares. Like, he you know, flips out, and he's like, I mean, granted, he cancels the abort. He's like, no, we're going after the knock list. But I think his, like, passion really comes through, and then we get the incredible scene in the phone booth. I think it's probably one of my favorite in the movie, where he's like, they're all dead. They're all dead, you know. See, I think Tom Cruise is fantastic in this film. I think he really sells like all the emotion.
Yeah, and to an extent where I feel like in the more recent ones, he doesn't have this kind of emotional base to his performances. And there are some scenes that are supposed to be heart wrenching, but it's harder to care because Tom Cruise is absolutely giving it his all in this first one.
Yeah. And same with Kittredge. I fucking love Kittredge. He's such a piece of shit.
Yes. He is.
He has a good reason, theoretically, in this first movie he thinks there's a mole and all that.
He is delightfully, like, evil.
Yeah.
And he's evil enough, like, he's a good guy, but he's evil enough that he, in theory, he could be the bad guy.
Oh, yeah. You could totally believe it. Yeah.
Which, like, I had forgotten the context, so I saw these out of order. I saw 7 mm-hmm. first just because of time constraints, but I had forgotten about that, and he's kind of the same way in the new one, too, where it's
which is awesome.
What are you doing here, dude? Like,
Well, yeah, in 7, that's the first time he's been back.
Which I didn't know. I had totally forgotten. I feel like that's maybe a weakness of this series is just the exchangeability of the CIA guys, because like wasn't Alec Baldwin was in a couple of them?
Yeah, he was in 4 and 5.
Okay.
No, 5 and 6 maybe.
Five and six. Yeah.
He becomes the director of the IMF, and then I guess he's just gone
he's
now.
Off
I don't know.
Screen. Whatever.
Yeah. I agree. There are very few rememberable characters in the franchise. I think Philip Seymour Hoffman is probably one of the best as the villain of Mission Impossible 3. But I think Kittredge is one of those people. You know, he's in this first movie, he's very memorable because he's just a piece of shit.
Yeah, absolutely.
He turns out to be, you know, on the good guys, kind of. So it's really fun to see him back in the new one. But and this is also the first time we get to see Ving Rhames, who I really loved in this first one. We'll
he's
talk about
perfect.
What I thought of him in 7. But he's great being this earnest guy who he's disavowed, but he's got the skills, you know. And it's you already kind of see the friendship between him and Ethan kind of form in the first one.
Yeah, I thought Ving Rhames was terrific. You're right. The chemistry is already there and he fits the role perfectly and he's clearly having a great time with it. That's all you really need.
Yeah. The only stuff I think is besides the goofiness of the final scene the other thing I'm just kind of like, I don't know. It's all the Claire stuff. Like, I've watched the movie a few times, and on this watch, it made more sense to me of like, okay, the entire time she's working for Jim, and she's trying to seduce him to try and cloud his judgment or whatever. And I'm pretty sure they bang at the end, like before they do the final showdown, which is kind of weird.
It's implied, but they don't waste time on it.
Yeah, which is good. I'm glad they didn't waste time on it. But it's just like, I don't know. All that stuff just feels a bit weird. But I can also buy it if she's intentionally trying to seduce him the entire time. Because of Jim told her to, you know.
Yeah, and so I had forgotten that twist that she was involved, and it surprised me. I think it's played well enough, and the seeds of doubt are sown by Ethan even when he's having.
Yeah.
Okay, so a quick aside to talk about the amazing scene where he meets up with Jim, who is miraculously not bad.
Yeah,
and it's just one of my favorite instances of dramatic irony I've ever seen, where he's talking through to Jim all the like the ways that Kittredge went through with it, but in his head we see Jim doing it because at this point he's already sussed out that Jim is the bad guy.
But he doesn't know about Claire. He has the two different scenarios for Claire.
Yes, he doesn't know. He doesn't know the final nail in the coffin, which then ends up getting resolved, and I had forgotten that entirely, and I was surprised. I knew that it was going to be Ethan in a mask, but
it still got me though. Like it's such a good plan. If she walks in, she sees him. She's like, all right, yeah, here's the deal, and he's like, nope, it's fucking me. It's like, yeah, let's go, dude.
Another, I would say, a difference between the newer movies and this one. I love the gooey CGI masks. I miss them. It's just having it be like a different actor and then a pull off and it's a different actor. I like just the awkward, awful CG just goop being pulled off the face. I love it.
Well, I mean, for this movie, a lot of times it is just Tom Cruise in an old person mask, which is
which I can appreciate.
Yeah. Yeah, I appreciate it for as well. There's a lot of practical stuff in this movie, practical like effects and stunts and stuff that gets often Tom Cruise doing everything, which is what he's become known for. And yeah, it really works. I mean, you already mentioned in the trivia, but like, yeah, like it's Tom Cruise is the one who's being repelled down into the vault. And it just really adds to it. And also just like, how hype is that scene on the train where he's like, we're going to CIA, and Victor's like, oh, this is going to be hard. And he's like, Tom Cruise is like, don't worry, it's way harder than you think it is. And they break down the security system. Like, that's my favorite part of Mission Impossible, is like the heist part is like, yes. Here's the objective. We got to do this thing. Here's all the layers. Here's the plan. The plan goes wrong. How do we like, that's why Mission Impossible 4 is one of my favorites, with the Dubai hotel, the Burj Khalifa.
Yeah.
Cause that whole plan is really fun. And it's something I was really missing in 7, which again, we'll get to that when we get to it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love the heist in this movie, and it's that the security is so freaking ridiculous. Like, there's no way in hell that this would actually exist, but you don't care because it's cool.
Nah,
it's fun
yeah.
to watch.
Just who gives a damn? Another thing, because let's just go over the scene where they hack, break into the CIA and Langley and steal the data.
Yeah,
there is so much about this scene that I love that wouldn't really happen in a newer movie.
Mm.
It, like, especially in this franchise, just with the progression of tech.
Yeah.
Because, yep. like, in the newer Mission Impossibles, they'd have, like, a heat ray that would suck the data out of the machine from, like, the next block over. But on a very specific level, there would be an automatic repel. The fact that Krieger is actively holding Tom Cruise up for that whole scene. It is literally taught.
Yeah.
Pun intended, because it's like the tension in that scene is so great just because of how many things are going on. A bead of mm-hmm. sweat, the temperature in the room, the noise of a rope being dragged. Like,
yep.
Krieger must be like allergic to rats or something, because he's like desperately holding on to like all of these things just ratchet up the tension in a way that would kind of be lost with the advent of like special tech.
Yeah.
And also at the same time, he has these ridiculous large discs, which adds to it too, because there's actually a thing. Whereas like the flash drive's in my pocket. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I totally agree. I will say they didn't, I think they haven't fully lost that, at least to some of the newer ones. Like, again, I'll bring back Mission Impossible 4. When he's climbing the Burj Khalifa with the gloves, one of them breaks. And he's like, all right, I got to deal with this. Or in that same movie, they have to get to a server. So they have Jeremy, it's like this giant cooling chamber. So Jeremy Renner wears that like magnetic vest, and he has to jump into that fan. And then they catch him with the robot, and he's like floating along to get. So there's still some of that stuff, at least again in 4. But I agree with it. I agree with you. I think that scene is so well crafted.
It is.
And it just shows how goofy the final scene is. Like, the helicopter going into the tunnel being pulled, like, that thing would not last 2 seconds.
No, it wouldn't have made it in there in the first place. The train would have pulled it to the ground immediately.
Exactly. There's even enough lift inside of the tunnel to have a helicopter fly.
No, and like
it doesn't make any sense.
When the blades are, like, bouncing off the ceiling, just, what are you doing?
And he's like, I'm going to try to cut Ethan's throat with the helicopter blades. It's like, what are you doing?
This guy is just the most adept helicopter pilot of all time.
I will say, what I do love about that scene is when Ethan initially climbs up onto the roof, and John Voight's already, he's trying to climb to the end of it. Ethan's jacket flies up behind it over his head because of the wind, and then it gets pulled off of him, and Jim sees it fly past, and that's how he realizes Ethan's behind him.
Yeah.
That practicality I love.
It's a really nice touch.
And if he feels like in the place, and then they kind of, with the helicopter gets involved, it gets kind of crazy.
I had forgotten how that scene went, but to, like, up until the helicopter got hooked on to the train, I was like, is this just better than the train in the new movie? Like, it feels a lot more real, and then it felt a lot less real quickly. But for a moment there, that scene is very cool. It's goofy enough, but whatever, it's fun, so who cares?
Yeah. One other really small thing about the train scene that I always forget about and it always gets me is Ving Rhames is trying to jam the signal to Max's computer with his little cell phone pointed at it. And he walks away because Kittredge is on his way. And then that fucking attendant grabs the phone. He's like, you forgot your phone, sir. And it's like, you idiot. Yeah. And it's like the little stuff that goes wrong every time is what, you know, it what gets me the tension.
Also, that scene was funny because when he hands him his phone back, coincidentally, 11 people sitting around him are on yeah. their phone. And they're like, what? What? Where? I lost the signal. Why is everybody calling somebody? Whatever. I don't care.
Yeah. Yeah, man, it's so good. And also with Max, I think is really fun.
Yes.
With him getting kidnapped. And again, shout out to the first-person camera. Like him going to the meet, and we're in first-person, and the guy lights a match, and the car pulls up, and he gets in. They put the hood over his head. Like, we don't get first-person camera a lot anymore. And
no.
Bring it back, man. I loved it in this movie.
Well, did you ever see that movie? The one that was fully?
Doom?
No. Hardcore Henry.
Oh, no. I feel like I'll get motion sick.
Yeah, a little bit. Fully POV for the whole movie. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah,
POV
shots
are fun.
I remember it coming out and like, I kind of want to see that, but also I'm like, I might throw up.
Watch it on like an iPad on the table or something.
Yeah, that might be the play. But yeah, I really love this movie. I think it's not – when people rank the Mission Impossible movies, I feel like it's not high enough ever. Because like, not everyone have the mystery of this one. There's so much like cool mystery, and him figuring out what actually happened is so fun.
So I will say, like, I don't know why it's like this. I have an incredibly spotty memory of the Mission Impossible movies. I've mm-hmm. seen them all. Mm-hmm. I have. But something about some of them just doesn't hit as hard for me. I know nothing about Mission Impossible 2.
I've never seen it. I never will. I've heard 2 is horrible.
I've seen it at some point. 3 I remember because I know it's really dark and Philip Seymour Hoffman is great.
Yeah.
4 and 5 are a hodgepodge. I didn't even remember the Dubai scene until you mentioned it. Mm. I mean, I knew that scene was from Mission Impossible, but I couldn't have pinned down where it was from.
Right.
I had forgotten Jeremy Renner was involved. Is he a good guy?
Yeah, he's a good guy, but he's only in 4.
Right.
There's a cameo in 5, but yeah, he's on the team.
Yeah, 5, I got nothing. 6, I remember pretty vividly. A lot of it for the set piece at the end, which is awesome with the helicopter and on the cliffs. Yeah.
And, dude, 6 also got the halo jump in the thunderstorm, which
that's
is
right.
Like, 6 is probably my favorite just because those set pieces are insane.
But 1 stands out. Because so much of it is so memorable. I feel like after 1, all the villains kind of feel like villain of the week. Other than the one guy who talks in a whisper.
Solomon Lane. He's from 5 and 6.
Right.
Yeah. But and Philip Seymour Hoffman, though. Like,
right. That's true.
Yeah. So it's really just like 4 and well,
but
2.
There's 2. So much plot depth to focus on in this movie. That I just feel like it hits a little differently and is more impactful as a film.
Yeah. Yeah. I would definitely agree. As the series goes on, it becomes more about the stunts. But also I think especially 4, 5, and 6 are about the team with Simon Pegg getting in there, Rachel Ferguson,
Rebecca Ferguson,
sorry. And
please do
Big
not
Rames.
Put any disrespect on Rebecca Ferguson.
I apologize. Because Simon Pegg especially is so fun. And him and Ethan's dynamic is so fun.
He joins in 4?
Yeah, he's in 4. Paul Patton's there, but she never comes back. And Jim Renner's there, but he never comes back. So that's where they get Simon Pegg. And then Ving Rhames comes back in 5. That's where Rebecca Ferguson joins in 5. And I think that's, 5 and 6, that combo is really, really great. But yeah, if we want to transition to 7 now, anything else you want to talk about with the original?
I don't know. Pretty glowing. Just a really fun movie.
Yeah, that's a great time.
But yeah, we can move on to the recently released Mission Impossible 7 Twilight Breaking Dawn Part 1.
So again, spoilers if you haven't seen it. We're going to go full spoilers.
Now would be the time to shut her down.
Go watch it and come back and listen to this.
Yep.
If I can go first, Perk.
Please do.
I was a bit disappointed by this movie.
All right.
I came in with pretty high expectations because Christopher McQuarrie has done great with the last Mission Impossible movies. Like I said, 6 is probably my favorite of all time, with the team dynamic and the stunts. And, you know, we mentioned Solomon Lane was a great villain and really going after Ethan and bringing in his wife back as like a bargaining chip in 6 was like so like just well done, you know?
Yeah.
And 7 was just missing the plot for me. Like, this, the AI stuff was just so goofy, but they weren't in on the joke. Like, I feel like for 4, 5, and 6, I mean, and the series has always been kind of a goofy action movie franchise, but it feels like the cast is having fun and they realize, like, this is kind of an action movie we're trying to have fun. It felt like in 7, like, no, AI is bad and it's going to become a thing in the real world and we want you to be scared of it. And so we're going to have these exposition scenes that last way too fucking long, people talking about the same thing over and over and over and over and over again, and just really pound it into the AI is bad. And it just doesn't hit the same when Ethan's going up against not a person. Like, I feel like the hero-villain dynamics are, like we just talked about, usually pretty good in these movies. And him going after this entity. And granted, there's Gabriel, but they just retcon that. See, well, not retcon, but, so, but now they're like, hey, here's Ethan's backstory we never gave you before.
Right. So I don't care about it. Because I saw 7 first, I was like, oh, he's from the first movie? No.
No. This is what we hadn't seen before.
They invented a scene. It's in black and white, probably too high de-aging tech.
So I saw an article. They were going to do de-aging on his face, but they thought it was too distracting. So they just have his back of the head in those shots. Yeah, which I think was a good choice.
Yes, I definitely agree. But yeah, so the villain I thought was like a through line, like back from the original. But no, it's just an added backstory that we didn't know about.
And I think that could have worked if they had more Ethan talking about it more. Like, yeah, before I joined that. I mean, we'll get that in part two. We probably will. But it wasn't enough for this movie to sustain it and me to care about Gabriel besides Ethan just being freaked out. And we didn't get a lot of the crew dynamics. Like, we had the great scene of Simon Pegg disarming the bomb. I think it's really good. Mm-hmm. And having to answer the riddles and stuff. But Rebecca Ferguson dies. And I should feel bad because I love Ilsa as a character from the last two movies. And I didn't feel it because we didn't get a lot of time with her in this movie. And then she just, they kill her. I'm just like, it didn't hit. And I just felt unsatisfied from, I would never thought I'd say I was unsatisfied from plot and character because I'm going to be for the action scenes, but the action scenes weren't enough for me to sustain this as a Mission Impossible movie because I really care about the franchise and the characters and stuff. So yeah, I was a bit disappointed, unfortunately.
So letter to the listener, we haven't talked about this movie off record.
That's true.
And like, you pretty much agreed with me on literally everything. Like, we have almost the same take on a lot of it. The movie, it definitely tested my patience. It's long and it feels long. And you're right, it's because there is a lot of exposition about AI. There is a lot of time dedicated to establishing and building up Hayley Atwell's character, who I think she's good. But at the end of the day, it's like, oh, so we're just trading a female lead for female lead. Yeah. The Rebecca Ferguson death. So once again, I remember nothing about these movies. So I knew she was in the last couple, but I don't remember anything about Ilsa. And her death was obvious and it was gonna happen. It, like, almost the second she came back and they were like having a hug and it's like, she's gonna die. I feel like a lot of this movie was insanely predictable, which for a movie where the last one ended with the bad guy getting caught by a hook from a falling helicopter, like the predictability just really was tough for me because almost every point in this movie I saw it coming, saw everything coming.
The writing was just so weak, man. Like, this is the weakest written Mission Impossible movie by far, and I heard someone say it was overwritten. And I totally agree. And like, every time Cary Elwes is on screen, I'm like, what the fuck are you guys doing? Like, I love Cary Elwes, and you're making it this so boring. Like,
remind me who Cary Elwes is.
He's the head of the defense group, and he's the guy who was on the train later that gets killed by Gabriel. He's from The Princess Bride.
Right. The guy who's bad for the sake of bad.
Yeah,
like, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, and like that first scene when Tom Cruise comes in with the, he's wearing the mask and he uses the green grenades to talk to Kittredge. Those like four people going back and forth talking about AI last so fucking long. It's so boring. Like, what are we doing? Just get it. Like, Mission Impossible is great when you have a MacGuffin and then you got to steal a MacGuffin or like try to get it.
Yep.
And they had the MacGuffin and they just wasn't interesting to get it at all. Like, we had the cool, like I mentioned, there's a ton of callbacks to the first one, right? There's Kittredge. There's what I actually really loved was Kittredge has a relationship with the White Widow because she's Max's daughter. And at the end of the first movie, Kittredge and Max kind of make a deal. And so it would make sense that he knew her as a kid because of Max.
Yeah, yeah.
We get the slight hand stuff. We get the train. We get the MacGuffin has two pieces that have to come together, like the knock list. One thing I thought, I forget the actual code, but in Mission Impossible 1, when Ethan calls the phone booth and he has to give his designation, it's like Echo 9 or 1-1 or whatever.
Right.
He gives the same exact code when the food delivery guy comes in 7, which I thought was really fun. So yeah, it seemed like they were trying to go back to 1. But it's like, if you're trying to go back to 1, then do a mystery.
Then do a story.
Then do a story. Don't just be like, hey, guys, AI is bad. And, like, I think it's ironically too late to do an AI is bad story because now it's become in the common zeitgeist. It feels like the wrong time to do it. Like, I don't know.
So on that topic, I think this one is actually the front of the wave. And I am already sick of AI is the bad guy. And I think we're going to see so many more AI is the bad guy films upcoming soon. And like people are saying like, yeah, it was kind of predictive because, you know, they made this movie before all the ChatGPT and stuff like that. But man, oh man, it's just, I get it. AI is terrifying. Like if you look back at something like Terminator, yeah, that's that's AI. But the difference there being,
it was sci-fi.
And also it's Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas this is a circle on a screen. If this is going to be the trend, we are going to lose out on so many good villains because there's just no villain. It's just this, literally the entity. And you can't develop a relationship. You can't, it's not a character foil. It's just a void. It's just lack. And I'm sick of it already. I think it's one of the weaker points in the movie. Gabriel is in there. He has motivation, I guess, but it's another typical, like, why is there this one human who wants everyone to die? I never get that, but whatever.
Fun fact, apparently he was supposed to be Nicholas Holt, but he couldn't do it because of scheduling conflicts. I'm not sure if that would be better or worse.
I think it would be more distracting, actually. And I thought, for what it's worth, I thought the actor who played Gabriel was very good.
I agree.
With what little he had to do.
And I want to say, I think the cast on the whole is phenomenal. I think Hayley Atwell's acting was fantastic. Like, when she was had to act scared and frightened, like, she killed it. Like, on the last set piece in the train, when he's trying to get her to jump across first, and she keeps, like, grabbing him, and she's, like, freaking the fuck out. I thought she was fantastic. I love Pam Clemente. Gabriel was solid. Like, the cast was great. It's just the material was not there. It was not on the page.
The one, though, you had mentioned, or you had briefly referred to earlier, Luther's character in this movie.
I didn't like Luther that much in this movie.
So I have a crackpot theory.
Okay.
My thought is he was maybe going through something health-wise.
Like Vic Rames was?
Yes, because he's sitting a lot. He's separated from the crew for most of the movie. Like they write him out so he can go crack the mainframe.
Yeah, and he'll come back for the last moment in the next one kind of a thing.
It feels like he might have been like had something going on where he couldn't be there to his fullest. And
I get it. They're getting old, man. Him and Tom Cruise are getting old, and I really hope this next movie is the last one. Unless they're probably rebooted after, but like it'll be nice to kind of see these characters done.
Like, just give him an actual ending, not the nonsense. But they'll be back in Dead Reckoning Part 3.
Yeah. I mean, even, again, I'm not trying to be, like, ageist, but even, like, Simon Pegg was looking older in this movie.
Yeah, definitely.
And so like, I don't know how much time has passed since the last one, but
at what point does this stop being Mission Impossible and start being The Expendables?
Right. You know, well, I think that's why they are like, Hayley Atwell, you're the new class, you know?
Yeah.
And if they're going to reboot it, they're probably going to have her. Which, granted, like I said, I liked her a lot in this movie.
Yes. I probably wouldn't go see a movie, though, if she's the star and there's no Tom Cruise, Simon Pegg, Ving Rhames. Cruise
driving a motorcycle off a cliff? Yeah. I don't know. We'll see. But talk about the good. Let's talk about the stunts.
Yeah.
I think some of my, well, actually before that, going to AI really fast. I'll say two things I think was cool with the AI thing that they were able to do. One was Gabriel being erased from the video in real time was cool to look at, and they got him with a reflection, which was clever. And then I liked when it took over Simon Pegg's voice and was mimicking his voice and giving Tom Cruise the wrong directions. That was cool.
Yeah.
But that's about it.
Yeah, that's fair. I agree with you. The voice changer thing is always interesting. Although, like, realistically, if an AI takes over the world, it's not going to be talking to us, bro.
No, but I mean,
it's just
going to,
like, suck all the oxygen out of the sky and be done with us. at a minimum, it made sense, and it made for a great Tom Cruise running set piece. To circle back, though, before we get to the good.
Yeah.
You talked about how it was overwritten. I think it's overstaffed, too.
Mm.
Like you already mentioned the random CIA guy who's a baddie. Also, knock off Gary Sinise and his partner. They really don't need to be in the movie at all.
Shea Whigham.
Yes.
And I do like Shea Whigham, but also, yeah,
I've not seen him before, other than baggage. The fact that he looks like Gary Sinise.
You've seen him before. We can talk
maybe.
About
that. And then Paris, also.
Pom Clemente.
Yeah, she's really good, but why is she in the movie? What?
Yeah, because she has to save him at the end.
She has to save him and give them a necessary plot tidbit, but it's crowded, and yeah, I don't know. That a lot of the characters aren't really given enough to do to justify them being in the movie.
Yeah, I mostly agree. I do think the scene at the club when they're all kind of huddled around talking to the White Widow and it's like, who's going to get the thing was cool. It's like, it's cool to have these different groups trying to vie in for this key and stuff. But I don't think it was worth, like you said, the extra crowding and just extra writing they had to do that wasn't that good.
How many movies are we going to see where there's like a rave going on in like an ancient room? I feel like this happens all the time now.
John Wick 2.
John Wick 2. And it happened here. And those are my two anecdotes. But I feel like...
I don't think that's enough for it. I think you need at least one more.
If I had a nickel, example. I'd have two nickels. It's weird it happened twice.
Yeah. So yeah, let's talk about the action.
Yes.
The desert didn't really work for me. I wish it did. But... I also wasn't helped by the fact that the guy sitting next to me was on his phone for the entire first 30 minutes of the movie, which was driving me fucking crazy.
In his defense.
I don't know what this dude was doing. He was doing some like stock trades or texting or something. He was
alluding to the fact that the first act's kind of slow.
It's kind of slow.
Yeah.
Because what was the first scene? Oh, it was the submarine stuff.
Was cool. Yep.
Yeah. But yeah, the desert didn't really do a ton for me. I wanted kind of a more of a reveal or something that like, oh, she was actually this or that, but
we get the 11-second, oh my gosh, she's dead.
Yeah.
Did you buy that one?
Foreshadowing. No, not for a god. I've seen the trailer. Not for a god. I'm not gonna buy
it.
This
is what I'm talking about. So much of it's predicted. But
yeah.
I mean it's whatever. They go to the desert, you get a little set piece, you get some nice like close combat stuff. But yeah. Nothing too outstanding.
I think the next big step is all the car chase stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think was cool and fun, but also a little bit too long. Like, we were in those cars for a very long time. And, like, the gimmick of them being handcuffed together and, like, who's driving is, like, fun, but it was just overstated its welcome.
I definitely liked that wrinkle, but I agree with you that it was too long. It kind of reminded me of, I forget which, I think it's the Bourne movie where it's Jeremy Renner. Literally like the last 35 minutes of the movie are a car chase and then they get to a boat, the end. Like,
yeah,
it's like, what? Yeah. There wasn't a climax. You forgot to have a standoff. No, they just drove around for a long time.
Yeah. Well, and I'm going to compare because it's the same franchise, but like, I think 5 had a better car chase because you have a hard memory of this.
I'll take your word for it.
It's the one where Ethan's on the motorcycle and he's trying to chase down Ilsa and then she stands right in the middle of the road.
Yes.
And he has to crash the motorcycle, like, and everything before that. is really fun and good. And this one was also fun. Like, it's when they get the old small car and he doesn't know how to operate it and stuff. But, like, it was just a little too long. I don't know.
Yeah, a little bit.
And then, like, we get stuff at the airport, which is, I like them deep faking Tom Cruise and stuff to kind of juke out people and stuff. But then it's really into the train, I feel like. We get the motorcycle off the cliff into the train, which for both things, I think the sound design is really what sold me. Like, he goes off the cliff, which is just, you're holding your breath because you know he actually did it.
Yeah.
But then when it cuts to the close up and we hear the wind going past his face, like, super fast, that's where I was like, I was more in it.
Really well done. I agree.
And then when he busts into the train, I was with my buddy Joseph. He was dying laughing. And it is, like, comedic. It was like, of fucking course, you know? And, like, honestly, we needed more of that goofiness. Like, we didn't get that for a lot of this movie. And that was, like, genuinely really funny.
Yeah. I mean, I already talked about how the ending helicopter stuff in Mission Impossible 1 didn't really do it for me. But I was definitely cheesing the whole time.
Like, yeah, exactly.
Just laughing. Just like, what even is going on? But, yeah, I agree. Some of that camp is super nice to get in there to lighten the tone a little bit.
Yeah. Well, then before we get into the big stuff at the end, I don't know why I like this so much because I've never done before, but I love that when Hayley Atwell was wearing the mask, her eye color was still brown.
Yeah, I like that too. And
Vanessa Kirby was blue. But I'm also shocked her brother didn't notice. Yeah, but
also, like, they make colored contact lenses, guys.
I know. But I don't know. It was like,
you got all this tech and then you don't want to commit to put contact lenses in.
But I don't know why, but I just really liked it because it felt more like not just Vanessa Kirby doing a Hayley Atwell impression.
Mm-hmm.
It, like, and I'm pretty sure it was Vanessa Kirby
doing a Hayley Atwell impression. Yes.
Yeah. But it was like, it just sold way more because of the eyes. And I don't know, I just really like that. But yeah, anyway, the train stuff at the end. When him and Gabriel are fighting on top of the train, the sound, like I said, the sound design was insanely good. Like, when they're in the tunnel and the, like, lights on the ceiling are, like, rushing past them, and they've touched, it was, like, so scary because you're like, yes, if they even touch one of those, they're fucking done.
No,
like, no questions asked.
I love, too, when Gabriel starts crawling at him with the knife. It's like, yes.
It's like, bro, chill, dude. We're on break right now.
Yeah, this is time out, dude.
It's time out. So, yeah, I thought they killed it with all that sound design and stuff. And, like, even just, like, the runaway train part of it as well, where they're, like, the train's speeding up. It's not stopping. We got that dealing on all this stuff. And then the final set piece with the cars dropping. My God, they just kept going. And I'm glad they did, because for me, it was the kitchen car that really, like, sold it, of, like, the oil on the ground and they're slipping and they grab the dishwasher and it falls down. And it just, like, I really, really loved that stuff because it felt so just, like, thought out and, like, in that world.
That set piece saved the movie for me. It's just, it's so, like, the whole, all of everything on the train, I love 100%. And yeah, when you're like, God, surely at some point it's going to stop, right? Surely one of these cars will stop. I think momentum would suggest, no, they're gonna keep falling. They're all gonna fall, but whatever. Mm-hmm. We can hand wave that. But yeah, the vertical climb through each different level is just so awesome. And like, just even the views from when the back of the train breaks off and you can just see straight to the ground. It's like it's like the Dark Knight Rises scene where they tip a plane. Remember that? It's just really
what
fun.
What a great opening scene.
Honestly.
Yeah. Well, I think pairing Ethan with Grace was so smart because we have the seats in pro with the newbie and kind of their reactions being so different. I think really helped, like, make that scene even more interesting and more fun because, yeah, she's just losing her mind, but, like, we have to keep going or we're going to fucking die. And yeah, like, Paris saving them at the end, maybe a little cheesy, but hey, we got the necessary piece of information that'll lead us into part two.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, everyone got out okay. So, yeah, and I agree. I think that set piece really saved the movie. But this movie did not need to be 2 hours, 45 minutes.
It was too long.
Too damn long.
It's just, it's doughy in the expositional scenes. And guys, we all know what AI is. We don't have to dwell on it for so long.
Yeah.
People knew about it. Feels AI like after, was in the 90s.
It feels like after COVID, now we can't make movies about diseases anymore because I'm just already sick of it, you know?
Yeah.
It's like the same thing now where it's with AI. It's like,
it's going to be lots and lots of this.
Yeah. When I talked to you about The Creator, which is a movie coming out in mm-hmm. September, which is about AI as well. But that's more in the future. And it seems like really good. It looks like it could be good.
There's going to be more nuance to it for sure. Rather than just evil computer. Like there's actually a character involved.
That's true. Yeah. It's like, it's like a robot that's actually can emote and talk.
Yeah.
So,
before we close,
mm-hmm.
I want to bring to the table something that stumped me for the last year. This movie coming out has done me an even worse. Why does this movie have a 98 on Rotten Tomatoes critic score and Bullet Train have like a 50? I don't get why everyone hates Bullet Train, bro. I don't understand.
I'm right there with you.
I usually side with, like, I follow a bunch of critics. A lot of the critics I follow hated Bullet Train, like one of the worst movies that they'd seen. I don't get it.
I don't get it. It was so freaking fun, dude.
Bullet Train, yeah, and the it's ending, awesome.
The way it comes together at the end, like, is amazing, and that really like enhances the entire movie.
Like you can say whitewashing, sure, but yeah, I don't think that's enough to tank the movie. Michael Shannon's good, so who cares?
Everybody's good in that movie.
Yeah, they have Joey a lot King of characters, fine, but all the characters get development. You know, there's no Paris who's just on screen a couple times looking intimidating. You know, and
you could argue Zazie Beetz's character, but she has some build up as being like an assassin before we see her.
They get the ridiculous the water bottle having a character arc too. It's always great. That movie is so much better written, in my opinion. And the action is fun as well, and all of the character dynamics are super cool. And you could argue that it was too long, as if Mission Impossible weren't too long. We don't even get to the train for an hour and a half. Yeah. I don't. Basically, my soapbox is, why does everyone hate Bullet Train, but the train scene at Mission Impossible is just good fun? Is it people looking through a different lens? I don't know. Let us know in the comments below. Ring that bell. Don't forget to subscribe.
When it feels like, too, like, with just Seven, it felt like, and this maybe isn't the worst way to approach the movie, but it feels like, what's the craziest stunts we can do? Okay, let's make a movie around
that. Yeah.
As opposed to, and I don't know how they did the writing previously, but it felt like the older movies is like, okay, let's have a story, and then, okay, what cool set pieces can we do?
We can go somewhere. What could be cool that we do there, I guess, but.
I don't know. It just felt like the stunts were, like, by far and away the most important thing when they're making this movie, and they just didn't give enough time to everything else. And who knows? Maybe it was all set up and the next one will be great. But unless I need a cool heist. We didn't get a cool heist in this movie. I hope the submarine is a cool heist. But also, how can it be a cool heist?
What are they going to heist? What are they going to do?
But also, has Tom Cruise already gone to space, or is that later? Because I know he wanted to film something in the ISS, but I don't know if that was for Mission Impossible 8 or for a different movie.
Yeah, I don't know if that ever happened. I feel like we would have heard about it, but I think it was supposed to be for Mission Impossible.
Yeah, I don't know. So maybe they'll go to space.
I mean, they did mention a lot of satellites.
That's true. The AI's taken over all the satellites, so maybe they'll have to go to space to get one.
Maybe.
I hope it's good, and it won't be coming out for a long time because of the strikes. But
at a minimum, this movie is not bad. It's quite good.
No. It's just not as good as it could have been.
Yes, it had so much room to be better.
Yeah, like Fallout is so fucking good.
I would definitely still say go see this on a really big screen. Yeah. It's worth the $12 of admission price, 100%. But it was a little bit of a letdown because when you're expecting the moon and you land in Texas, you know, it's like, oh.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, you already
odd comparison. Can we just strike that one from the record?
Yeah,
I'm sorry, Texans. I didn't mean to come at you like that.
Yeah, well, you mentioned the Rotten Tomatoes thing. Like, I don't get how. Yeah, Mission Impossible 7 has an 81 on Metacritic. The original has a 59.
And I don't get that. It's a better movie, in my opinion.
It's a better movie.
Yeah.
Well, even if it's not a better, even if you don't think it's a better movie, how is it have a 59? It's not a, 6 out of 10.
And it's
at
funny,
least a 7 out of 10.
It's funny, too, because, like, the movies, despite being in the same franchise, are almost incomparable.
But,
like, they're so different.
But yet, they tried, like, 7 tried to copy 1 with so much stuff. So it's just, it's so weird.
They did. They pulled a lot from the original. But the scale is so different that they kind of get lost in the fray.
Lost in the sauce, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I just hope that 8 is a fitting end to this franchise, because I love this franchise a lot, and I hope that, you know, end well. But, yeah, I just need a heist. If they get me a good heist, I'll be happy.
Yep.
All right, well, I'll just mention a quick Bones review. I'm still watching Suits. I'm addicted to that show. It's so, I love it, and I'm going to keep watching it. Right now, I want to finish it because I never finished it before.
Oh, okay.
And I know that Dulé Hill shows up at some point and becomes a main character, and I love Dulé Hill from Psych.
Okay.
So I like to get at least that far.
Sure.
So yeah, I love that show, and I just it's become a problem where I'm staying up too late watching Suits. But
yeah, I mean, it just means it's a good show.
I know. It's hard when it's a 45-minute show.
Yeah.
Because I'm used to watching anime, which is 20 minutes, and the 45 is rough. And I'm like, one more, and then it's, you know.
I generally find, though, if I have like a 20-minute show versus an hour-long show, I would just watch 3 of the 20-minute anyway. But
you're not wrong. You're not wrong.
It adds up anyway. Like, I keep saying, like, oh, I'd rather just watch Futurama because it's quick and I could be done. And then it's like 10 episodes later and I'm asleep on the couch.
Yeah. Exactly. And just a tease, I will have some anime coming up. I brought back the waking up in the morning watching anime routine.
Nice.
I wrote my roommates into it. So I'll have something for that relatively soon. But yeah, there we go. That's our show for this week. I guess recommendations. I don't know.
Watch Mission Impossible.
Top Gun, Maverick.
What is number 6 called? Fallout?
Fallout.
Yeah.
Yeah, watch Fallout. But yeah, if you're going to watch 6, you got to watch 5 because the same villain and there's a through line. But also, you have to watch 3 because it's his wife. And
also, I would if I watched those again, I would get to know what Rebecca Ferguson actually does.
Yeah.
Other than look stunning. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Dude, yeah, I saw a meme on Twitter of like Mission Impossible 7, don't fall in love because everybody in this movie is hot as hell.
Yep.
Just like, what do you want from me, man? Yeah, I was actually really happy to see Pom Clemente because she's done a lot of action now with, like, she was Mantis and Guardians, and she's a lot of other ones for that. And then I was looking at her IMDb, she's done some other action stuff. So keep putting her in action movies. She was great. She had great ferocity and stuff.
Definitely.
Playing as Harley Quinn, essentially.
Fair enough.
But yeah, there we go. That is our show for this week. Next week, we are going to be following Mr. Jean Reno from the original. He plays Krieger to his most famous movie, Leon the Professional. Because, Perk, you've never seen it, right?
That's correct. I've never seen it.
And I've only seen parts of it, and it was when I was a kid. Natalie Portman's first film. So I'm very excited to watch that next week. That is on Netflix. So yeah, next week will be Leon the Professional on Netflix. But until then, thanks for watching. Bye.
Bye-bye.